Radio Netherlands, not national, but international, broadcasting direct from Northwest Europe. Media Network, the weekly communications magazine with Diana Janssen and Jonathan Marks.
Hello, welcome to the first show in September. Summer is over. Autumn is on the horizon.
In a few moments, we're looking at radio in a war zone. But first, we bring up the line to Chris Greenway from BBC Monitoring in Caversham, England, because a radio station associated with a former war zone has reappeared on the dial. It's in the Middle East.
Yes, the last time Mother of Battles radio from Baghdad was on the air was in January and February of 1991, which was the period of the Gulf War there. And what happened was that during that war, the Iraqi radio service became so dislocated and damaged by the coalition bombing of Iraq that its radio networks were put all in disarray, and Mother of Battles radio, which they sort of set up especially for the war, really got effectively bombed off the air in about a fortnight after it started broadcasting, and no more had been heard of it since then, and didn't reappear until last month.
But the date of the 2nd of August is rather significant, bearing in mind that was the date that Iraq invaded Kuwait in 1990.
That's right. That's the anniversary of that invasion, and of course no coincidence. The radio itself, Mother of Battles radio, that of course is the term which the Iraqis used to refer to the subsequent war between Iraq and the coalition forces. And they've made it clear that the aim of this radio is very much as a pan-Arab broadcast that will bring Iraq's point of view to the rest of the Arab world.
Is it the same sort of tone as during the Gulf War?
Yes, it's very rhetorical. I have to say, though, that monitoring it has not been at all easy because, like the other Iraqi radio services that are on the air, they've never really recovered in a technical sense from the Gulf War, during which many of their transmitter and other technical facilities were destroyed. And Mother of Battles Radio is announcing two broadcasts a day, the first one between 1600 and 1900, GMT, that's only on medium wave, two medium wave frequencies. There's a repeat later in the evening between 2000 and 2300 GMT, but although they're announcing various shortwave frequencies from that, we've only actually heard them on one, and even that we haven't heard now for a little while. They only actually seem to have got one shortwave transmitter operating at the moment for their external services. And at the moment, that's operating on a variable frequency around 7150 kilohertz.
From what I hear, then, it's very erratic.
Yes, well, like all Iraqi radio broadcasts, it's actually quite a struggle for us generally to actually, A, keep track of what broadcasts are on the air from Iraq, and also actually just to monitor them on a day-by-day basis.
From the Middle East back to Europe, because celebration is afoot at the moment.
That's right. We're now celebrating this year 100 years since the invention of radio. It was back in 1895 that various people, particularly, of course, Marconi, operating in this country, demonstrated outside the laboratory that radio transmissions could work. And we here at BBC Monitoring this week have been able to take part in a special event to mark that centenary. The Institute of Electrical Engineers have been having celebrations in London to mark the 100 years of radio. And as part of that, they arranged with some authorities in Sweden who have in their museum in near Gothenburg in southern Sweden a machine called an Alexanderson alternator, which is a very old-fashioned form of transmitter. It transmits on the extremely low frequency of 17.2 kilohertz. And if you think in terms of wavelength, that in fact is over 17,000 meters long. And in order to transmit that signal, they use a quarter wave aerial, and that quarter wave aerial is over 2 miles long. Now, of course, it's long been out of service now, but it is actually still able to transmit on occasions, and it was last on the air a few months ago. to celebrate its 70th birthday. But on Wednesday of this week, it was brought on the air again to transmit a special signal, in Morse code, of course, to the conference in London. But because in London the noise level was too high for the rather weak signals to be picked up, we here at BBC Monitoring stepped in, and using our aerials and special receivers, we are able to tune into these very, very low frequencies. And we picked up the broadcast from Gothenburg and fed the Morse code down the line to London for the conference delegates.
Chris, thanks for joining us. Now we're off to a part of Europe where radio is often a lifeline.
Hardly a day goes by without the tragedy of former Yugoslavia being mentioned in the news bulletins, often in the headlines. Foreign correspondents file reports by the hour using satellite uplinks and a team of production people on the ground trying to follow the events. But does any of this independent coverage actually reach people in Bosnia-Herzegovina? Ruud Huurman is a spokesperson for a Dutch fundraising organization called Press Now, based in Amsterdam. They've been running a publicity campaign to raise money to support independent media in the region. The fundraising poster has a picture of an explosion near a building with the slogan, "Another transmitter of the air." When Ruud came into the Media Network studio, I asked him if, as a result of the war in Bosnia, there are any independent media left.
Yes, there are still quite a number of independent, and this is what we are especially aiming on, independent media operating in Bosnia-Herzegovina. In fact, we have to say that it's quite a lot that's still operating. Of course, the problem is that not all these media have their good access to the people in Bosnia-Herzegovina. There's places in Bosnia-Herzegovina where it's hardly possible to get newspapers that are printed or to listen to radio and watch television stations. The only problem is that these media are in big trouble to work because of the war. Many experienced journalists, first of all, some were killed, and a lot of them had to flee because they were in big trouble. They were threatened by some of the other groups. All kind of things happened, but a lot of experienced journalists had to leave the country. And this makes that in the actual situation, there's a lot of very young people that are very willing to do something, but are not at all experienced as a journalist. And of course, this has some dangers in it. They are not always aware of what it means to gather news, what it means to give an objective opinion and things like that.
But you only provide them with money, with funding. You don't provide them with training.
I'm happy to say that this is not true anymore. It's true that in the beginning especially, there was a lot of urgent needs, and this was especially money and also goods, like just paper, equipment for radios, tapes, very basic things were needed. This year, in the frame of a big action for Bosnia especially, we managed to organize a training, which will start in January 96. And this is really done for this young group of journalists to train them in making news, in working in a more democratic field of society. So I think this is one of the things that we're starting to get up to from now on.
In countries like Lebanon, for instance, we see that radio has always been divided along religious or political beliefs. So you have a station with a Christian viewpoint, you have a station with a Hezbollah viewpoint, a communist station. Is it a similar situation in Bosnia?
In a way, yes. You see in some cities that there is really a separation like that. For example, a good example is the city of Mostar, where also the city is divided in a Croatian and in a Muslim area. There you see that there's really a Muslim station and a Croatian station, and they are quite opposing each other. This is really a separation. On the other hand, you see that, and this is very good example, is Sarajevo and Tuzla, where there's still a lot of people that are trying to work together. So the different groups, Serbs, Croatians and Muslims, that are trying to work as a team to bring objective news, to keep the discussion and debate about the society alive.
Which stations do you support?
In Sarajevo, there's a very important station called Radio Zit. This is really one of the cultural centra in Sarajevo, where a lot of activities take place. They organize very large concerts, rock concerts. They make very interesting programs, for example, in periods where the bombing, the shelling on Sarajevo was too tough for people to get out of their houses. They organized school radio at home for the children so that the school could go on. They organized with teachers special service for correcting the homework and things like that. In Tuzla, for example, we support Radio Chameleon, which is also a quite multicultural and multi-religious station.
Radio Chameleon!
Dali ste čuli za Radio Chameleon.
This is Rock and Roll Radio. Stay tuned for more rock and roll.
But there are other stations too.
There is several others. N91 in Sarajevo. There is Front Sloboda that is starting up a station in Tuzla. So several stations are supported by us.
I san zaspala, dilbere sajma.
Press Now works with refugees from all the warring parties in former Yugoslavia to ensure they don't support stations which promote conflict by only taking one side. They check the advice they get from the refugees in Holland with Dutch diplomats and non-governmental organizations or NGOs working in the war-torn region. But does Ruud believe that radio or the printed word is more important?
They serve a different goal. The newspapers are sometimes hard to get, but it's easier to spread them out just by copying them or reading them with 10 families, which really happens sometimes. For a radio, one needs a receiver. Most of the people have receivers, but sometimes the broadcasting is disturbed by other stations, so they are both needed still, I think.
Are there enough batteries available for the radios?
This is a problem, like in Sarajevo, and actually this goes for all the places in Bosnia-Herzegovina, the electricity quite often is blocked.
Last year, Press Now raised about $1 million to help the independent media in former Yugoslavia. They are set to raise the same amount in 1995, and the focus is more in Bosnia. Meanwhile, there are other organizations in Western Europe busy with similar support projects, such as Medienhilfe in Germany or the American Soros Foundation. The key, though, is coordinating these efforts.
This is very important. The last 2 years, actually, we've been working on that quite a lot, because what you see is that media start to understand that there's a lot of money available, and they make different requests to different organizations, which is very understandable, because sometimes it takes very long before the money arrives. And we think it's very important that we know that what we give is really needed, and that we don't give twice to one station, for example.
And we'll keep you posted as to the developments.
Other networks just tell you when and where. We tell you why. Radio Netherlands, putting the why into wireless.
But wireless hasn't got a why.
It has now.
Domestic news now.
The Dutch broadcasting organization Veronica says it will commence test transmissions of its new News Radio AM station as from September 18th. Look for low-power tests between 05 and 17 hours UTC, consisting of news bulletins, weather and traffic reports. The Dutch transmitting company Nozema expects delivery of the permanent transmitter in October, so that by the middle of next month the station will move to a 24-hour operation. The tests on 3095 kHz will also determine whether the expected interference problems with Radio Tirana, which uses that channel in the evening, are serious enough to warrant a frequency change to another part of the medium wave band.
interesting to see how far they get out. There have been problems in the Caribbean with very bad weather, as you may know, and this has affected the island of Antigua, home to the BBC's relay station for that region. Jeff Spells is a senior engineer for the BBC's Schedule and Frequency Management Unit. He's on the line from Bush House in London now. Jeff, we've had quite a lot of electronic mail and calls on the answer line, which indicate that, for the moment at least, BBC Antigua is silent.
Well, indeed, we do have a problem. As you're aware, Hurricane Lewis has hit Antigua, and we have had to close the station for safety reasons. Now, many of the transmissions we have covered at either Ascension or from the UK, so signals will be a lot weaker than normal.
People are mentioning the frequency 5975 as an example.
Yes, indeed. That's one that we've brought back to the UK.
Does that also affect Deutsche Welle programmes as well?
It will indeed affect Deutsche Welle programmes. The whole site is closed at the moment.
How do you keep in touch with them?
Well, this is the difficulty. All communications are out, and the only means of communication is via ham radio.
Talking of the BBC, you may have heard that the BBC helped to put out Ireland on shortwave, as we reported from Berlin last week. We've been inundated with tapes from people, including one from Sean O'Brien, Dublin, who taped the sign-on of the special transmission at 14 hours UTC.
Good afternoon and welcome to you all, wherever you're listening in Western Europe and North Africa. I'm Colm Connolly. We're broadcasting to you from the RT Radio Centre in Dublin via the shortwave transmitters of the BBC in Britain. We're broadcasting on 9605 kHz on the 31-metre band and 5875 kHz on the 49-metre band.
After that followed the commentary on the All-Ireland hurling final, which was won by the team from Clare in the end. It seems that the shortwave experiment may be repeated on 9605 and 5875 kHz on Sunday the 17th of September, when the All-Ireland football final is going to be played. But at the moment, RTE in Dublin can't confirm if it'll go ahead. Arthur Cushion from Invercargill, New Zealand, is on the line now with his media update for September. Arthur, did you manage to hear the station?
Yes, we did, Jonathan. We only one frequency, 5875, came in about 15:30 and sign off about 15:58. Sign off was quite good. Crest reports and the names of the producers of the program, and an interesting statement that if they found it successful, they may do further broadcasts in the future. So that was an interesting signal to hear right down here in New Zealand. It would be the most distant report they'd receive.
But it's not the first time you've heard Ireland.
No, there was a station in Athlone on 9590, for memory, about 7.5 kilowatt. That's going back about 40 years ago.
And you also heard some of the stations we mentioned during the Indonesian documentary.
I have heard many of those Indonesian stations going back to 1938. In fact, I verified well over 100 low-powered Indonesians in that period when it was under Dutch control. They had a YD call. Some of the wireless groups, like Java Wireless Society in Bandung, they had a PMH call. A lot of them are only 100 watts, 150 watts, and down on 120 metres, a lot of them, and 90 metres.
You also had a verification dated January the 21st, 1947, from the Voice of Free Indonesia. What was that about?
Well, that was in competition with the Dutch government. It was in Yogyakarta, and they say in the letter there that there was a job to get the mail into the station because it was a clandestine station, really, but there seemed to be mail service, so you had the two opposing sides broadcasting at the one time.
Fascinating stuff. Back to the present, and I understand that reception of Vanuatu is difficult at the moment.
Yes, they have disappeared on 4960 during the morning sign-on at 1900, so I phoned the technician there, and the position is that they're now 1900-2100 on 3945, 2100-0600 on 4960, and 0600-1115 back on 3945. And in December, they're going to bring back the old channel of 7260 for their midday transmission. So there will be a change in December.
Talking of bringing things back, it seems the BBC World Service will be back on local airwaves in New Zealand.
That's right. The BBC World Service will be operating from October 6th. As you may recall, last December, the network of three stations was sold to a new company called Radio Liberty, and the BBC cancelled the contract. This new group will carry BBC programs from Auckland on 990 kilohertz, 1 kilowatt, 24 hours a day, and they will inject IRN, that's independent radio news, the service for local news. The rest will all be BBC World 24 hours a day. From Palau, I had an interesting letter from an engineer there who's a New Zealander, and he's saying that they're still busy installing the transmitter, doing the aerials, and they're still just running on one transmitter, 0800 to 1800, and it's 9965 at the moment. Pakistan, Islamabad, a letter of verification indicates their English is 0230-0245 on 17705 and 17725, and 1600-1630, the best channel there, is 7425. A broadcast from Thailand at 1100, they're on 7260. They open at that time in Vietnamese, but they announce in English that they're broadcasting on 7285, but they're actually on 7260, 1100 sign-on. Costa Rica, and a new channel will be noted for TIAWR, and that's heard at 0555, and the frequency is 7375. Not announced during their list of frequencies as they sign off. In Sudan, we're hearing Omdurman at 1755 in French, 1800 time signal in English, news for about 7 minutes, then generally an English feature program, music, and just before 1900, they identify in French and English and then move into Arabic. The frequency is 9200 kilohertz.
Time for one more, an update from Canada.
Yes, that low-powered station in Canada, CFVP, Calgary, which has been operating since the late 1930s, CFVP, which stands for the Voice of the Prairie, operating on 6030, and their medium wave station has changed the call to CKMX, the Mix 1060, and that's been carried on shortwave 6030. One of my friends in Edmonton, which is close by, reports very good reception on the new equipment.
Arthur, thanks for joining us.
Media Network, database download.
Time to review a new book now, which gives an excellent overview of how we'll download information within the next 5 or 50 years, depending on where you live. It doesn't matter whether it's audio, video, or simply text. Nicholas Necroponte is director of the Media Laboratory at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT, which is in the northeastern part of the United States. He's also one of the founders of Wired magazine. His new book, Being Digital, is acclaimed on the jacket by such luminaries of the communications industry as Arthur C. Clarke, Rupert Murdoch, and Douglas Adams, who you may remember was the creator of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. In some ways, this is an unusual book, though. For one thing, there isn't a single photograph or diagram in it, yet it's easy to understand, even for someone with no previous knowledge of the subject. The other thing that strikes you is that it's broken up into a lot of small sections, most of which are self-contained and don't require you to have read all the preceding sections. That's also rather unusual for a book dealing with what is, after all, a technical theme. There's a reason for both these things. Much of the material is based on the author's regular column in Wired magazine, so it's really like reading a series of back issues, but no less enjoyable for that. Diana, what do you think?
Well, it's a good idea to read the first few pages of the book before dipping in. This is where Negroponte sets out the fundamental principles on which his arguments are based.
The best way to appreciate the merits and consequences of being digital is to reflect on the differences between bits and atoms. While we're undoubtedly in an information age, most information is delivered to us in the form of atoms, newspapers, magazines, and books. The information superhighway is about the global movement of weightless bits at the speed of light. as one industry after another looks at itself in the mirror and asks about its future in a digital world, the future is driven almost 100% by the ability of that company's products or services to be rendered in digital form.
The great advantage of digital delivery is that it creates the conditions in which the consumer can potentially have far more individual choice, such as video on demand. The concept, which is sometimes called narrowcasting, is simple.
Instead of delivering 1,000 television programs to everybody, it might be better to deliver one program to each person in 1,000th of the real time. This will totally change how we think of broadcast media. The broadcasts of most bits will have nothing to do with the rate at which we consume them as humans.
Negroponte is critical of some of today's technology because, he says, it just isn't efficient. Take the fax machine. Most fax messages are typed into a computer, which is digital. But then the messages are often printed out, turning them into atoms. When the printed fax is scanned by the fax machine, they become digital again. At the other end, the receiving fax machine again converts the incoming digital message to atoms by printing it out on paper. Then, sometimes, the printed message is typed or scanned back into another computer, once again rendering it digital. Described in these terms, it's no wonder that Negroponte is scathing.
The fax is a serious blemish on the information landscape, a step backward, whose ramifications will be felt for a long time. Fax is not even economical. Email is 10% the cost of a fax, measured per bit or per second, running at the same speed, 9600 baud. At 38,400 baud, it is 2.5% the cost of a current fax.
And he's similarly dismissive of another familiar appliance, the video cassette recorder.
I have not recorded a TV program in more than 6 years. Not because I can't. It's because the value is too low for the effort. It is needlessly hard. More important, VCR usage and remote control units in general have been treated as a button-pushing problem.
Negroponte believes the real problem is poor interface design and says that the challenge for the next decade or so is to produce devices that will interact with people rather than the dumb devices in use today. Just about anything we find around the house and office gets the same dismissive treatment.
A telephone handset is probably the most redesigned and over-designed appliance on Earth, yet remains utterly unsatisfactory. Worse, telephone designs have been featured to death. Number storing, redialing, credit card management, call waiting, call forwarding, auto-answering, number screening, and on, all of these are constantly being squeezed onto the real estate of a thin appliance that fits into the palm of your hand, making it virtually impossible to use.
So if today's devices are so badly designed, what improvements does Negroponte want to see in the future?
My dream for the interface is that computers will be more like people. This idea is vulnerable to criticism for being too romantic, vague, or unrealizable. If anything, I would criticize it for shooting too low. There may be exotic channels of communications of which we may not even be aware today.
If that sounds a little far-fetched to you, just think for a moment about the rapid rise of the Internet. 5 years ago, few people outside the computing circles had heard of it, much less used it. Now, the popular press often features stories about the Internet, and there are so-called cyber cafes where you can have a cup of coffee and a snack while exploring the Internet. And in Amsterdam here, there's even an internet pub. Negroponte doesn't comment specifically on these, but from what he does say, it's very likely that he approves of them.
The true value of a network is less about information and more about community. The information superhighway is more than a shortcut to every book in the Library of Congress. It's creating a totally new global social fabric.
This emphasis on how digital technology can positively benefit society prevails throughout the book. With all the negative publicity in the popular press about digital communications, such as pornography on the internet, it's refreshing to read a book with such a positive, upbeat message. You might not agree with everything, Nicholas Negroponte says, but his straightforward, accessible writing style makes the book a good read. and will certainly start you thinking about some of the things you've always taken for granted.
Being Digital, subtitled The Roadmap for Survival on the Information Superhighway, is written by Nicholas Necroponte. The edition we looked at is published by Hodder and Stoughton in the UK, the price £12.99. And the ISBN number is 03406452 53. And a copy of that review is also on our internet page.
Don't worry if you miss something today, as you'll hear it later from some other station.
Now let's see if Mike Bird's equipment is working, despite the cold weather down there in Melbourne, Australia. Mike, let's have a survey of the propagation conditions over the last 7 days.
Solar activity was again very low, and the geomagnetic field was active to minor storm on Tuesday and yesterday. The solar flux ranged between 76 and 72. The average works out to 74, which equals an effective sunspot number of 11, and that is down 5 points on the previous week's level. The geomagnetic field disturbance indicator, the estimated planetary A index, ranged between 3 and 32, which represents quiet to minor storm. The magnetic field was generally quiet until 3 hours UTC on Tuesday, when a storm started, which lasted until 12 hours UTC on Wednesday. The cause of this storm was a coronal hole on the sun. Worldwide MUFs were depressed by up to 40% at times.
And what about conditions between now and the 14th of September?
Well, IPS Radio and Space Services expect solar activity will remain low. The geomagnetic field should quieten today, but from Saturday to Monday, we're expecting active levels to prevail. Hopefully from Tuesday, the magnetic field will quieten.
Thanks, Mike.
Next week, we look at radio in times of conflict and preview a new shortwave wireless, which we hope will arrive in Holland next Tuesday. Join us for that.
In the meantime, have a pleasant weekend.
Media Network, produced and presented by Jonathan Marks and Diana Janssen for Radio Netherlands, the Dutch International Service.